You're listening to the DolphinsTalk.com podcast network. Welcome to Dolphins Talk Weekly, your one-stop audio breakdown of all of this week's Miami Dolphins news. Now, here is your host, Kevin Durr.
Well, good morning, good afternoon, and good night, Dolphins, wherever you are and whenever you're listening to this. I hope you're enjoying the first victory Monday of the season. The Dolphins coming off the 20-7 win over the New England Patriots in week one on Sunday. Welcome to another episode of Dolphins Talk Weekly. I am your host, Kevin Durn. Please give me a follow on Twitter at KevinMD4. You can follow the show on iTunes, Spotify, or Spreaker, wherever else you get your podcasts. And please bear with me, folks. The allergies are a little bit worse this week than they were last week and last episode. So I do apologize if I sound a bit under the weather. And of course, the Dolphins Talk Weekly podcast is brought to you by BetUS. You bet, you win, you get paid. BetUS. And we've got a lot to talk about in this week's week one recap episode. Going to go through a couple different segments. We're going to do my general thoughts on the game. We'll go through and do kind of a review of the passing game on offense and defense, the run game on offense and defense, hand out some game balls, and then do a quick mini preview of our week two opponent, the Baltimore Ravens. But first, a quick word from our good friends at Manscaped. Smooth sack summer is slowly coming to an end, fellas. If you haven't been scaping for the summer sun, it's not too late to sweep your sack of those pesky pubes. As summer comes to an end, we enter fall. Keep your boys clean and fresh just in time for fresh ball fall. The leader in below-the-waist grooming is here to make sure your pubes feel smoother than a beach ball and smell fresher than your girl's pumpkin spice. Start the new season the right way and join over 6 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with this exclusive offer for you. 20% off and free worldwide shipping when you enter the code DOLPHINSTALK, that's all one word, DOLPHINSTALK, at manscaped.com. The Manscaped Performance Package 4.0 has everything you need to keep your sweet sack in check. Inside this package, you'll find their Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer, Weed Whacker ear and nose hair trimmer, Crop Preserver ball deodorant, Crop Reviver toner, Performance Boxer briefs, and a travel bag to hold your goodies when you order now from Manscaped.com. The Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer features a cutting-edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents thanks to their advanced skin-safe technology. The Lawnmower 4.0 also has a 7,000 RPM motor, a new multifunction on-off switch that can engage a travel lock, very important, and gives you the ability to turn on the 4,000K LED spotlight on and off when you need a more precise shave. Did I mention this trimmer is waterproof too? Whether you're hopping in the shower or hitting up the lake, this razor will devour even the strongest pubes. Now that your sack is smooth, lather up with Manscaped's liquid formulations to get that fresh ball freshness. The Crop Ball Preserver, ball deodorant to stay cool in the heat. Their soothing aloe vera formula is the best in the business for below-the-waist freshness, and the clear drying formula keeps your sack looking and smelling good. Manscaped even threw in two free gifts to their Performance Package 4.0, the Manscaped Boxers and the Shed Travel Bag that'll bring your comfort to another level at home and on the go. Again, get 20% off plus free shipping with the code DOLPHINSTALK. All one word, DolphinsTalk, at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code DolphinsTalk at manscaped.com. Keep things smooth and fresh as we say sayonara to smooth ball summer and enter fresh ball fall. And thank you to the folks at Manscaped for sponsoring the Dolphins Talk Weekly podcast. And I've got to say, just in general, starting off, you know, the past couple years have been pretty hectic for my wife and I, two kids. I've changed jobs twice now, basically since the outset of COVID. And prior to COVID, the job that I had required some additional work on Saturdays pretty frequently. So I really haven't had a chance to watch too much college football and just kind of enjoy it. And on Saturday, had my two brother-in-laws over to the house, had some pizza, had some drinks, you know, watched some football, and it was great. And, you know, I guess to me, as you know, I guess someone who played in high school, a former player, that sort of nervousness feeling that I used to get before the games kind of has transferred now to the Dolphins. You know, I feel that way, you know, usually about 10 or 11 a.m. that morning once all the preview shows start. And I start to get nervous, even if I think the Dolphins are going to win and I thought they would beat the Patriots. I still get that nervous, anxiousness feeling. And it's kind of that release mechanism when they win. And it's nice to be able to start the season off right. I don't have the team kind of controlling my mood for the next 3 or 4 days before we go into week two. I can just be happy and enjoy it. And I guess in general, you know, it's a good win. Congratulations to Mike McDaniel. You know, this offense has, or this offseason has brought some weird circumstances. You know, the owner, Stephen Ross, can't attend games until, what, like the end of October. You know, the ownership group is basically getting blown up and Steve Ross's daughter is going to get the team. So those things are, I guess, kind of looming in the background a little bit. You know, you have this high-profile acquisition in Tyreek Hill. You keep Josh Boyer and the defense intact. If anything, they've added to it. You know, what were you going to do? And, oh, by the way, you've got to come out against the second winningest coach in the history of the National Football League, who I can't remember the graphic CBS ran, but basically just devours rookie head coaches. And McDaniel, you know, has one game under his belt, and he's got one W to go with it. So congratulations to Coach McDaniel, and congratulations to the Dolphins on the 20-7 win over the New England Patriots. And that sounds good. It doesn't ever not sound good to beat the Patriots. So I'll enjoy this one a little bit extra. And, you know, right now, better time, you know, what better time than now to have our little victory sip of some Lagavulin 8 here on a Sunday night as I record this. While it was a good win, it's what I would call sort of a Shrek win. You know, the game was a little bit ugly. I would say maybe a little sloppy at times. You know, you had a couple guys, Tyreek Hill, Cedric Wilson, kind of have the football get popped out, and they were lucky enough to be on the sideline. You know, you had the high snap early in the game. You know, you had Tua, that weird rollout to the right where he tried to throw downfield and, you know, was closer to two Patriots than anyone else. That could have been intercepted. So things to clean up. And my old high school coach, Coach Olds, used to say it's easy to coach when you lose because you've got a lot to correct and a lot to work on. It's hard to coach when you win because that's the goal of the game, is to win. But he said it's a little bit easier when you win and you don't play as well as you should have. And Mike McDaniel basically intimated that was the case. He felt like they left a little bit of meat on the bone. I thought overall this game really kind of had the same flavor as we've had the past 2 years. You know, kind of early on, things start a little bit slow. The defense gets a turnover, gets you going a little bit. Defense kind of carries the day, you know, wins the turnover margin 3-0. As long as the offense doesn't make any mistakes, they don't turn the ball over, you win the game. And that's exactly what the Dolphins did. Even though the scoreboard says 20-7, the offense only put up 13 points, you know, one touchdown. So I feel like there's certainly things that Mike McDaniel would want to change about that. And, you know, not to jump too far ahead, but we've got the Buffalo Bills coming to town in 2 weeks. 13 points isn't going to get a victory against those guys. You know, I don't care how good the defensive performance is. You need to score more than that. So with that said, let's kind of dive into it. We'll do the passing game offense first, and then we'll review the passing game defense first, just from sort of a 30,000-foot approach. Just to be completely transparent, I have not rewatched the game. I watched most of the game with a two-month-old, who did turn 2 months old today, September 11th, on my lap, and was pretty well-behaved, but had to feed her a bottle, had to burp her. Didn't really give as much attention to the game as I would normally like to, but, you know, dad duty calls, and dad duty always wins. I'll probably rewatch it later this week once the All-22 comes available. I think that's usually Tuesdays. So keep that in mind. And if I do think there, find some things that are glaring in my sort of rant about this game. I'll touch on them on the next podcast. But as far as the passing game goes, I thought Tua was efficient. If I had to pick one word to describe his performance, I would say efficient. You know, kept the chains moving. He didn't really have any bad decisions until the fourth quarter, you know, where he had two, and fortunately they didn't really burn him. I thought the offense ran well. You know, you didn't have very many pre-snap penalties. You only had the one issue with the high snap, which he was able to control. I thought he did a nice job of spreading the ball around. Let's see, we had 9 different Dolphins caught at least one pass, and 3 different Dolphins had at least 4, those being Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle, and Chase Edmonds. So was able to spread the ball around fairly efficiently, and even his average yards per completion was 8.2, which I believe last year he ended up at like 6.7 or 6.8, something like that. So had a little bit more going for him. And, you know, I think it's a pretty good sign that they trusted him to do or to go for it on that 4th and 7 where he got the touchdown to Waddle. You know, I saw a couple people tweeting about, you know, he doesn't have the velocity on his throws and that doesn't allow you to get yards after catch. And, you know, some people tweeting about he's making the wrong decisions and wrong reads. Yeah, I think it's way too early to jump to those kinds of conclusions. You know, clearly he's very accurate with the football. You know, when things go right, that pass to Waddle was perfect. And Waddle caught it in stride, hit the burners, and went through 3 Patriots for a touchdown. But I think Tua could be even more accurate. And I kind of came up with this analogy and ran it past a friend of mine who I think kind of got the reference. But I said, you know, today Tua was sort of like the Chris Chambers of quarterbacks. He made the hard stuff look easy, and he made the easy stuff look difficult. Like, there were layups that he missed. You know, he had the 2 short hop throws. I think one was tipped. But then you had that early pass to Tyreek Hill on the screen where he threw it high. You know, and the defender made the tackle. He had the throw to Raheem Mostert on the throwback play off the play action look. Not a good throw. Mostert made a Herculean effort to turn that into a positive. So, you know, if I were giving Tua a grade on this game, I'd probably give him a C. You know, it was average. You know, he didn't win the game for us. He didn't lose the game for us. You know, he managed the game well. And I think that's what, you know, the bare minimum of what you expect a franchise quarterback to do. The trick is going to be, you know, can he build on that? Can he hit some of those play action plays? Is he able to find that deep crosser instead of having to check it down to the back? Now, kudos to Raheem Mostert and especially Chase Edmonds for doing the damage they did through the air. But I think there are things kind of left on the field that the Dolphins can certainly get to in the playbook. Excuse me. You know, one of the things that was interesting to me, and I get why they're doing it, it's to create, you know, misdirection and confusion, especially when you're going up against a defense as smart and as disciplined as Bill Belichick's. But rolling a left-handed quarterback to the right doesn't make much sense, nor does rolling a right-handed quarterback to the left. I don't understand why teams do it as frequently as they do. I think Miami did it 4 times by my count today. I don't think any of them ended up with positive plays. But that's something that you're going to have to hit later on in the year. I get it. But that was too frequently, especially when you lost Austin Jackson early in the game to an injury. You know, would love to see them try and open things up a little bit and take some downfield shots. I think that was a little more challenging to do today because it sort of seemed like the Patriots' philosophy on defense was whatever you do, don't let Tyreek Hill beat you deep, which is why that deep, you know, deep out route, deep hitch route, or excuse me, not hitch, but deep out route, deep comeback route, whatever you want to call it, was so wide open is because they made sure they weren't going to get beat deep over the top. So I think Miami's going to have to be a little more assertive. I wouldn't say aggressive necessarily, but assertive in trying to take some of those shots or creating some of those shots. And maybe you try and do some more with Waddle, you know, to try and open up Tyreek Hill a little bit, because I feel like teams are going to slant the field and roll coverages towards Hill a little bit more. So just some things to look at. I thought the offensive line overall in terms of pass protection was pretty good. You know, Teron Armstead was as advertised. You know, I can't really think of any pressures he gave up all day. You know, he got rolled up on a little bit at the end, but came back in the next series. Hopefully that means he's fine. But the blocking, the pass blocking was worth every penny today. Robert Hunt got beat on the first sack, kind of inside by Dietrich Wise. You don't really see that too often. You know, then they had another sack on sort of a pass rush game. The Dolphins run the same exact play with Van Ginkle and Ogba. The Patriots ran it today, and Matthew Judon got inside. The nose tackle, whoever it was able to kind of eat up Connor Williams and Liam Eichenberg at the same time, and Connor Williams wasn't able to get off the block back to the front side A-gap to hit the looper. What's interesting about that play, because CBS did show the all-22 angle of it, is Teron Armstead, you know, was looking for work and almost came back and made the block, which is, you know, pretty freaking cool, like when you consider the freak athleticism it takes to do that. I think the running back should have been in a better position. I don't remember who it was on that play, but really the sack is the fault of Williams and the running back. But if you get the chance, watch it. Armstead coming back and almost getting there in time was, you know, that's just a freak thing you don't see many offensive linemen being capable of doing. But overall, I thought it was good. You know, right tackle's probably a bit of a concern because, you know, Austin Jackson, he got hurt and he pointed to his heel, played one more snap, and then immediately took a knee after the next play. Usually that's the sign of an Achilles. You know, I don't want to jump the gun, but it didn't look too good. You know, I thought Greg Little coming in did fine, but even he got dinged up at the end where they had to put Robert Hunt out at right tackle for a couple plays. So that's something to keep an eye on. As far as the pass defense, I think all things considered, you didn't have Byron Jones, you didn't have Eric Rowe. They did a pretty nice job. You know, Xavien Howard is Xavien Howard. And, you know, for my money, he or Teron Armstead, one of those two is the best player on the field in most games that the Dolphins are going to play. And I think maybe today I would give that nod to Xavien Howard. The one comment I would have to say is, you know, he shut down Devontae Parker. I think I agree with, you know, him maybe getting away with the pass interference on the pass breakup he had on the opening drive where Holland got the interception. But if you're not going to call that interference, then there's no way you should have called illegal contact on the play on fourth down later in the game. You know, Miami would have likely gotten the shutout had that not occurred, because that was fourth down and that was New England's drive where they went down and scored. You know, really the one kind of liability we saw, you know, Nick Needham, I thought, did a really nice job. He doesn't have the elite foot speed or the closing speed that maybe Xavien Howard and Byron Jones possess, and got beat deep a couple times, kind of got bailed out. But gave up one long catch. So that's something to kind of keep an eye on as we get into, you know, the Bills and Bengals games coming up here in a couple weeks. But, I mean, going into the season opener and you're giving work to Keon Crossan, and maybe even more so, you had to give work to Elijah Campbell and Kader Cahoo, you probably didn't anticipate having to do that if you're Josh Boyer going into week one. You know, I didn't think Miami ran a ton of exotic looks. You know, yeah, they brought some safety blitzes with Brandon Jones and Javon Holland, but that's kind of been a staple of theirs the past 2 years. Maybe not so much as what they did today, where, you know, Jones was kind of, a couple times he was lined up about linebacker depth and blitzed from there. Oftentimes when they do those safety blitzes, they're up on the line of scrimmage, and you know, he made a fantastic play on the strip sack that Melvin Ingram recovered for a touchdown. But I thought, you know, Josh Boyer didn't really dig too deep into the playbook. You know, they showed some 5-0 looks, but didn't come with the zero blitz They played a lot more coverage, which I think is smart, especially against a quarterback that's not mobile like Jones. They ran some traditional kind of four-man with one linebacker dime looks. Really the most exotic thing they did, I believe this was on the Patriots' last drive, and it was on the play where there were the offsetting penalties when Holland had the roughing the passer and they had the chop block. But Xavien Howard comes all the way out. He was playing right corner one-on-one against Parker and blitzed all the way from there. Not the slot, but all the way from the boundary to try and get Mac Jones. Now, whatever the Patriots did, whether it was David Andrews adjusting the call or Jones audibling or just the initial play call itself, they slid the protection that way. And, you know, really kind of left Xavien Howard kind of in the lurch, because if he goes all the way around Jalen Phillips, you know, there's no way you're going to be able to get back to the quarterback without having to retrace your steps. And if he goes inside of him, which may have been what the design was, because New England slid the protection, he would have gone straight into Cole Strange. And, you know, at that point, the laws of physics take over and you're probably not plowing through a 300-pound guard as a 203-pound corner very often. So I think there's more to be kind of unearthed in this Josh Boyer version of the playbook. And we'll talk more about that when we go over the running game. But kudos to Boyer and Madison and Surtain and Steve Gregory for getting guys like Elijah Campbell and Kader Kohou and Keon Crossan ready to play. You know, we've seen that before out of Boyer, especially back in 2019, but to see it again today was pretty cool. The run game, let's go on offense first, and I think today left a lot to be desired. However, and I talked about this in some of the training camp episodes, the defense that New England runs, which, you know, Josh Boyer said the other day, and verbatim, that 95% of what Miami runs, he took from the Patriots playbook while he was there. This defense is designed specifically to stop runs off the edge, meaning runs off your tackle, runs off your tight end. It's designed to try and force things back to the middle. I think Miami in particular ran into a bit of a buzzsaw in this, you know, this circumstance, because New England's got some beefy dudes who've been in the system a while, you know, Dietrich Wise, especially on the edge. You have Raekwon McMillan, who's been in the system under Flores and is now back in it under Belichick. You have an absolute missile in Kyle Duggar, who can fly down and sort of act like another linebacker. You have Jabril Peppers, who's got experience playing as an overhang defender. And basically New England said, you know, if you're going to beat us with the run, it's going to be up the middle. And you trying to do that against Christian Barmore and Devon Godshall, that's not an easy task. And we saw that borne out today. Miami, you know, as a team, ran the ball 23 times for 65 yards. That's less than 3 yards per carry. And then three of those, Wilson, Waddle, and Hill, combined to have 3 carries for 22 yards. So 20 carries for what, 43 yards is pretty bad when you look at just what the running backs did. Now, one of those was Alec Ingold on a 3rd and 1. He got 2. Okay. But you've got to find ways to get Edmonds and Mostert more involved. And I do think that the line is not entirely to blame. I thought there were a couple times where Edmonds, especially on some of the stuff inside, kind of picked the wrong hole. I did think as a team, New England tackled better than Miami, especially early in the game. I don't recall Miami having a ton of padded practices in camp. I believe the CBA states you get 14 of those a year. I think there are several left that Miami can use in the regular season, which I think is sometimes a good thing. You can see where they're going, you know, with some of this stuff, with these motions and misdirections and formations. It's just not quite there yet. And personally, I think they needed to use Alec Ingold a little bit more. You know, they tried to use it towards the end of the game when they were up 20-7 to try and ice it. And they had a pretty decent drive going until they tried that weird kind of rollout play action thing with Tua, and it went incomplete. Then you had the other play where this was kind of Tua's other short circuit decision where all he had to do was run. He didn't even need to get the first down. He could have slid for about an 8-yard gain and tried to throw it back across the grain, and it went incomplete and stopped the clock. You know, those little things, it's just kind of like, what are you doing? But I think that's a little bit of them pressing, you know, Tua, McDaniel, because the run game just couldn't get going. And I think New England, a very disciplined team, they've had success against Kyle Shanahan offenses before, you know, even on the biggest stages. You know, they've won 2 Super Bowls against Atlanta and the Rams, against Kyle Shanahan and, or, well, I guess Dan Quinn, but Kyle Shanahan was the offensive coordinator in Atlanta. They won against Sean McVay. They know what they're doing. So I wouldn't come down too hard on the run game yet. If it looks that way by the time we're facing, say, the Jets, who actually did a really nice job against the Ravens on the ground today, then I would start to worry. But I'm going to give it sort of this first quarter of the season, the first 4 or 5 games, before I kind of judge that. Looked like Raheem Mostert had a little bit more juice, and maybe they give him some more carries until Edmonds is fully comfortable. But you can see where a lot of this is going with the misdirection, with the little end-around play with the fake reverse action on it. It's going to hit some of these less disciplined, more aggressive defenses later in the season. So my word there would be patience. I think it's coming. It's just not there yet. On the flip side, the Dolphins run D, I even tweeted this out. You know, there were a couple drives where it just felt like they were getting gashed. But I think it, I'm going to read you this stat, and I think it surprised a lot of people. The Patriots only ran for 78 yards today. They ran it 22 times for 78 yards, which is 3.5 yards per carry. That's almost an entire yard per carry less than they gave up as a team a year ago. They were at 4.4. So that's encouraging. Now, one of those was Mac Jones kneeling down before the half. I think it's kind of cheap to count that because it's an automatic 2-yard loss. So I'll say New England ran 21 times. You take away that one carry and you add the 2 yards back on. 21 times for 80 yards. That's 3.8 yards per carry. Not bad, all things considered, especially when you didn't have Eric Rowe, who's a pretty underrated run defender. But looking specifically against Miami's performances last year against New England, so week 1 of 2021, the Patriots ran it 30 times, picked up 125 yards. That's 4.2 yards a carry. In week 18, the Pats ran 27 times, picked up 134 yards and 2 touchdowns on the ground. That's a 5 yards per carry average. So Miami really cleaned that up, especially in the middle. And they did a really nice job against Ramondre Stevenson. He had 8 carries for 25 yards. That's a 3.1 yard per carry. Jacoby Myers got credited with 1 run for 7 yards. I think that was on a screen where the pass went laterally instead of forward. So that's kind of a cheapie. Damian Harris, 9 for 48. So you'd like to see that cleaned up. And he did have a 12-yard run. So even if you take that one out, he's still over 4 yards a carry. But much better effort than a year ago against New England in both of those games. And I think the toss stuff, which is going wider than the edge, you know, wider than your tight ends, is what Miami struggled with today. And the Patriots caught them in bad looks where they're able to use those crack toss plays to come back. I thought Miami's backside linebackers, Melvin Ingram, Jerome Baker, on most of those plays, Andrew Van Ginkle and Jerome Baker on one of those plays, did not do a very good job of getting off blocks and gave up that edge. You're not really going to expect a corner to take on a, you know, a leading guard while he's being stock blocked by a receiver. It's tough to do. You need your safety to be able to run the alley and make a hit. None of Miami's safeties are super big dudes. We don't have a Rashad Jones or a Cam Chancellor or even a Kyle Duggar who can fly down and make those plays. So you're going to give up some of those toss plays on the edge, particularly if you can catch Miami in some of those condensed looks. What I will say, though, is Josh Boyer made a pretty nice adjustment midway through the third quarter, and he started playing Emmanuel Ogba and Zach Sealer more in four-man fronts, and played, especially Ogba, played him out wide, and they kind of killed all those toss plays from that point on. I think Ogba turned one back to the point where it was either Melvin Ingram or Landon Roberts got a tackle for loss, and they basically stopped doing it to Emmanuel Ogba's side. That's an adjustment that maybe we didn't see enough of last year, or it happened too little too late. So I'll give Boyer credit for kind of switching things up, you know, mid-game and fixing that problem. I also thought it was pretty ingenious use of them to incorporate Raekwon Davis playing a position other than the nose. They had him playing the 2-eye and 3-technique spot, and they even brought in Big John Jenkins, who looks better than he did in either of the two previous years he was with Miami, as the nose tackle, just to get some extra beef inside. You still had a couple plays where, like, Elandon Roberts, you know, kind of guessed the wrong hole and the back was able to cut back for extra yardage. You had some missed tackles. I think Brandon Jones had one. I think Jerome Baker had one. There was another corner, maybe Needham, that had one. And then you had a couple times where, like, Jalen Phillips was able to wrong arm the tackle but couldn't get his hand free to make the stop. You know, he basically set it up to where the back had a two-way go, but no one was able to scrape over and help him out. Those things are all things that you can clean up, and I think it's certainly team-based. I would expect you see a lot different looks from Miami in the front seven next week against the Ravens, particularly if they're bringing back some of that option stuff. You know, I did not watch any of the Ravens-Jets game, but I think some of those things will look a little different. And then I would say, too, like, they ran a lot more of the fronts where it's a four-man front, but you had 3D linemen, so two tackles and end. And then a lot of times it was either Phillips or Ingram kind of standing up playing the other DN position, which is a lot more of what they actually did back in 2019, especially when they had Vince Beagle on the roster. He was kind of that stand-up guy. So those were some interesting things to see. I thought Boyer showed a little bit more flexibility with what he did up front than maybe what we saw with Flores, especially with regard to stopping the run. You know, the special teams I thought were great. You know, Jason Sanders looks like he's back. Morstead did a nice job. Really the one nit I have is Blake Ferguson did not have a good day snapping. He had two low snaps on a punt and one high snap on a field goal, or it was an extra point. I think it was after the, I think it was the Melvin Ingram touchdown. He had a high snap that Morstead did a good job of handling. So Ferguson was a little over, all over the map today. Normally you don't see that from him, but I thought Keon Crossan was great. He had that nice fielding of a punt inside the 10. You know, and that was one of the things I talked about as we kind of go into the final thoughts on the game. We talked about in the episode last week was, number one, who can run the ball better was probably going to win. Statistically, New England ran the ball better, but they didn't run the ball well. So that was kind of a net nothing. You know, managing Tua, you know, helping him kind of have that game. And then the special teams. I would say Miami won two of those three battles, and really no one won the battle of the ground game. You know, you go and you look at it, there's 13 yards difference between the two teams. So nothing really, you know, one first down distinguishable between the two. But overall, I thought Miami did a pretty nice job for game one, week one, against a Belichick team, especially against a Belichick defense. You know, there were times when they were a little choppy and a little sluggish on offense. There were times, you know, two of them where Tua made pretty bad decisions. You know, the play where he threw it back across his body instead of sliding to keep the clock running. And then the one play where he threw it, you know, across his body when he rolled to the right, to no Dolphin in particular. One of the Patriots defenders almost picked it off. And that's kind of the thing. It seems to be sort of hardwired into his circuitry now. You kind of get one or two throws a game where you're just like, what is he doing? Both of those came in the fourth quarter, which is usually when he's played his best ball. So we kind of saw a breaking of that pattern. You know, I thought the first quarter was slow. I thought the second quarter was better. How can we get that to be more consistent all the way around is probably the next step. Doing something different this year, we're going to do a game ball segment. We're going to do two players on offense and two on defense. But this week, being week one, I wanted to give two out on the coaching staff first. Number one, Mike McDaniel, you know, first win as a head coach. I wouldn't say this offseason's been tumultuous, but there's been some weirdness to it. You have a weird situation where you've retained half the staff, more or less. You've retained the defense, and you come in and you get guys to play together and fight. And, you know, you beat the Patriots. While the score wouldn't indicate it was handily won, they never really had a shot at being in control of the game. So kudos to Mike McDaniel. I'll give another one to Josh Boyer. You know, this was your first game at the controls without Brian Flores kind of sitting on your shoulder. And I thought the adjustments that they made, especially when you look at them playing that game without Eric Rowe, who I believe, other than maybe Landon Roberts, has the most experience in that defense. And you didn't have Byron Jones as your other corner. So basically you played, you know, a guy who's normally in the slot outside and then basically rotated three different guys through the slot that normally you probably wouldn't have playing on defense, all things being equal. So good job to Josh Boyer. The two game balls will start on offense. These are pretty obvious. You know, Tyreek Hill, pretty nice debut for a Dolphins receiver. 8 catches, 94 yards, averaged 11.8 per pop, also had a 6-yard run. Really intrigued to see what they do with him moving forward. The other one, Teron Armstead, a left tackle. You didn't really see any pressure coming from that side the entire day. I thought he run blocked fairly well, especially for someone who didn't play in the preseason, coming off an off-season surgery. You know, got rolled up on a little bit, came back the next drive and finished off the game. That's big, you know, worth every penny so far. On defense, I might catch some flack for omitting one here, but number one would be Brandon Jones. Gets the chance to start, doesn't have to split time with Eric Rowe, comes out, has 11 total tackles, 6 solo tackles, has 1 pass deflection, 1 quarterback hit, 1 sack, 1 forced fumble. Heck of a day for Brandon Jones. The other one was Emmanuel Ogba. Had 4 tackles, 3 of them solo, had a tackle for loss, a sack, and 2 quarterback hits. And I think, you know, I hate to bring up Brian Flores, but he used to mention the hidden value that sometimes defensive players have that doesn't show up in the box score. His ability to kind of take away those outside toss plays, especially to the left, so him playing right end, which normally Ogba's a left end, he basically shut that play down, you know, midway through the third quarter on through the rest of the game. So that was pretty cool. And then my honorable mention for the day goes to Kader Cahoo. You know, you come in, your first NFL game, you're an undrafted free agent out of Texas A&M Commerce, and you get a tackle for loss, and you just absolutely, I can't remember who caught that pass, but smoked a Patriots receiver and got that fumble when it looked like the Patriots might have a, you know, a small crack in the door to try and get back in the game, and Jalen Phillips recovered. So hats off to you, Kader Cahoo. Now, before we wrap up, we'll take a quick look at our Week 2 opponent, the Baltimore Ravens. I think the game's certainly going to be a bit different than it was last year. You know, Baltimore, I believe they are still missing J.K. Dobbins for the next week. Ronnie Stanley was downgraded and did not play today. I haven't seen the game, so just looking at the box score here, the one thing that jumps out to me is the Jets kept the Ravens' run game in check. The Ravens ran it 21 times for just 63 yards. So that's three a pop. Lamar Jackson had 6 for 17, so that's under 3 yards. Kenyon Drake was their lead back today, 11 carries for 31 yards. That's under 3. The Jets' run defense was not good at all last year, so they must have had a bead on something Baltimore was doing in this game to thwart that. And that's something Miami's going to have to do next week. The Ravens' line, you know, pretty good usually, especially if they do get Ronnie Stanley back. I think it's going to be one of those games where you're probably going to see Miami try and operate with more speed. So that probably means some more of the jack fronts that we didn't really see a ton of today, where Jerome Baker is on the edge as a linebacker, just to have some speed to help thwart the option and stuff. Looking back through here, you know, the Ravens won the turnover battle, but it was only 2-1. The Jets won the time of possession battle by 5 minutes exactly. Penalties were about even. You know, really, it's just Lamar being a lot more efficient than Joe Flacco. Lamar, 17 of 30, 213 yards, a touchdown, one pick. Flacco, 37 of 59, one pick, one touchdown, 307 yards. Jets, 24 first downs to the Ravens, 13. So I wonder if special teams has a big role to play in terms of flipping the field and that sort of thing in this game. You know, the Ravens only had, they got sacked twice. The Jets got sacked 3 times. You know, on paper, it looks like the Jets kind of outplayed Baltimore, just not on the scoreboard. So that'll be an interesting one to watch through. I feel like after today, you know, going into the season, I had sort of predicted Miami might start 1-3. I didn't feel too good about going into Baltimore, and someone would have to look this up, but I don't know that Miami, have they ever won in Baltimore? You know, maybe back in the 90s when the Ravens first came on. I can't, off the top of my head, I cannot think of them beating Baltimore in Baltimore. The last couple times we've been there, you had the 40-0 game on Thursday Night Football. You had the 38-6 beatdown in 2016. Hasn't been too pretty. But I feel a little better about Miami after what I saw their defense do today. The Buffalo game still seems like a buzzsaw, and I guess I'll be that guy. Like, until I see it with my own eyes, I wouldn't pick Miami to win that game, you know, much to my chagrin. The Bengals game, they did not play particularly well. Joe Burrow had an awful game. They'll bounce back, and that's going to be a really tough atmosphere. They're inducting Willie Anderson and Ken Riley into their Ring of Honor. Do yourself a favor, research Ken Riley, and even for that matter, Willie Anderson. Both of those guys should probably be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. They're not. Willie Anderson might be one of the best, if not the best, right tackles of all time. And Ken Riley, I think, you know, he's got an astronomically high number of interceptions throughout his career. I think, I want to say he's in the top 4 or 5 all-time in interceptions. They're doing the all-white unis on that Thursday night. That could be a bit of a buzzsaw, too. But if Miami's able to steal one of these next 2 games, given what they have after that Bengals game, okay. Okay. You might be able to go on a nice little run here. But, you know, let's not jump the shark. We got Baltimore week 2. Another big game, road game. Going to be an interesting atmosphere. Baltimore's home opener. They played at the Jets today. But after all that I've said, the Dolphins are 1-0. They beat the Patriots 20-7. Even though it wasn't super convincing on the scoreboard, if you watched it, New England never really had much of a chance to get in control of this game. You know, Kader Cahoo forcing that fumble that Jalen Phillips recovered kind of slammed the door shut on him. So, again, shout out to Coach McDaniel. Shout out to the Dolphins. Congratulations on going 1-0. Let's try and go 1-0 this week. Again, please give me a follow on Twitter at KevinMD4. Follow the show on Spotify, iTunes, Spreaker, wherever you listen. Would love to hear from you guys. If you have any ideas for segments for the show, please hit me up. And as for right now, I'm going to sign off, fins up, and finish this nice glass of Lagavulin. Enjoy your Victory Monday.